This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This week, a Boston jury awarded $71 million to the family of a Roxbury woman who died of lung cancer in 2002 at age 54. Her name was Marie Evans, and she was a lifetime smoker. A few weeks before she died, Evans spoke with her lawyer about how she started smoking.
Why did you smoke Newports?
Because they had free access to them, first of all, and they were pretty packaged. It was just always available. They were the ones available. That's what I seen everybody else smoking, so it was obviously what I was familiar with.
Evans said that as a 9-year-old, she'd been given free samples of Newport cigarettes, which she then traded for candy. She described the women who handed out the sample cigarettes as attractive, and in her words, all the things that I wanted to be. By age 13, Marie Evans was smoking. At this month's trial, the maker of those cigarettes, Lorillard Tobacco, was found liable for Evans's death. The jury decided that Lorillard had specifically targeted children by handing out free samples. And hearing was held to determine if additional punitive damages should be awarded on top of the $71 million that Lorillard has already been ordered to pay. The jury is currently deliberating on that point. The company says it plans to appeal the decision, and it denies that it marketed cigarettes to children in Roxbury, where Evans lived. Now, since the 1960s, when Marie Evans was a 9-year-old, a lot has changed in the way cigarettes are marketed. It's now against the law for tobacco companies to give out free cigarettes to anyone, kids or adults. And companies can no longer use cartoon mascots or advertise in magazines with large teenage readerships. But they can still give some free products away, smokeless tobacco products. Lois Biener is a senior fellow at UMass Boston who's done a lot of tobacco research. I asked her about some of these new products, like Camel Orbs, which look like Tic Tacs and come in colorful containers.
The current law has not banned the distribution of smokeless tobacco products, and that would be considered a smokeless tobacco product, along with the new snus products that are being marketed heavily now.
This is SNUS, snus.
SNUS. These are small pouches of finely ground tobacco that are portioned in little tea bag size pouches, and you place them under your lip, and they don't require spitting like conventional smokeless tobacco. So they're being promoted as something that you can use anytime, anywhere, regardless of smoking bans, for example. These things one can still get for free, but the law is much stricter now than it used to be. The distribution of free samples of smokeless cigarettes is restricted to, it says, adult-only facilities, but these are not, for example, bars and clubs where you had to be 21 to get in. These are defined, adult-only facilities are defined as temporary structures that are erected for the purpose of distributing the free samples. So they're like tents. They'll have a tent set up at a concert or at a rodeo. They do a lot of rodeo promotions. They used to have lots of advertising on the exterior of these structures so that kids who were at these events would still be exposed to the marketing. But now the law prohibits anything more than just the name of the brand on the outside of the structure.
President Obama signed legislation last year that no longer allows tobacco companies to make flavored cigarettes, flavors like strawberry and vanilla, which had obviously appealed to children.
Right.
But menthol cigarettes were not included in that legislation, and menthol cigarettes like Newports are the cigarettes at issue in this case in Boston this week. Mm-hmm. Do you foresee menthol cigarettes eventually being outlawed as well, potentially?
This is something that is under intense discussion at the moment by the FDA and their advisory panel. There is a lot of pressure for the banning of menthol as a flavorant, but there is also an enormous resistance. Whereas the flavored cigarettes that have already been banned really made up a very small proportion of the market, menthol is an enormous proportion of sales.
Why is that? What's the appeal of menthol?
Well, it appears to make it easier to inhale the smoke. Menthol is particularly attractive to African American smokers. We're not quite sure why. Maybe a combination of the marketing that goes on and kind of passing down the norms of smoking particular brands.
And when you said menthol is inhaled more easily, does that mean more direct delivery of nicotine to the lungs?
Yes, and easier to sort of initiate the smoking habit, because it's frankly painful to, you know, inhale smoke into your throat and lungs. It hurts when you first start. And menthol has a cooling aspect to it, which makes it easier, as they say, makes it easier for the poison to go down.
Lois Biener, you basically seem to be saying that even though tobacco advertising today is meant for adults only, that there's no such thing as adult-only tobacco advertising. You know, that it will inevitably make impressions on minors.
That's true.
What does your research show in terms of the scope of that impact on minors? All this supposedly adult-only tobacco advertising, how much does it end up luring in kids?
Well, there's quite a bit of evidence that shows that the more kids are exposed to tobacco advertisements and promotions, the more likely they are to start smoking. And in addition to advertisements that can be seen in every corner convenience store, there is an enormous amount of advertising on the internet. It's quite easy for young people to get access to tobacco websites, and on those websites, they can find very attractive approaches that are really geared to hook young people in. It doesn't look like it's about tobacco. It looks like it's about nightlife and hip new bands and a place to download music, a place to play gambling games. This is the way tobacco is advertised.
That it's a way for a fun party life.
Right. R.J. Reynolds has a new campaign that's called Break Free, and they've tied their brands to cool places like Seattle or Las Vegas or Austin, and they make available packs of cigarettes that feature images that are associated with those cities.
Williamsburg, Brooklyn, I believe, of course, right. The very hipster part of Brooklyn.
Right.
I believe that Camel has made some kind of tobacco packaging specifically for that area that has New York on the package.
It has Williamsburg on it.
Do you think that's savvy marketing?
Well, yes. I mean, it's really hooking into the hipster areas and also making it very sort of unique to small groups as opposed to just, you know, one national brand. And recently, the Association of Attorneys General has just asked R.J. Reynolds to end this campaign because they feel that it is really designed to appeal to youth.
What do you think is the most effective tobacco marketing going on today?
The most effective marketing that goes on today really has to do with the tobacco package, because it's portrayed as an image that is cool to be associated with. And if you take a look at the brands of cigarettes that kids smoke, they smoke the most highly advertised brands. They don't smoke the cheaper brands. The majority of them are smoking Marlboros or Camels or Newports. So it's the image, the graphic images that are associated with the tobacco products that I think are very important. And when in 2012, that's going to change pretty radically, because a new regulation is going to go into place then that requires that at least half the package be devoted to a graphic health warning about the physical damage that can be done by smoking cigarettes.
These will be the images of diseased lungs and diseased
and
brains.
And mouth cancer, and one of them that's being tested now, a corpse lying on a gurney with a toe tag. They're pretty gruesome.
It seems that no matter how government at any level tries to regulate or legislate to tamp down this marketing to kids, the tobacco companies find other creative ways to do it.
They're very smart. They've been at it for a long time, and they spare no expense.
Lois Biener, thanks for coming on Radio Boston.
You're very welcome.
That was Lois Biener, a senior research fellow at UMass Boston. And joining me now is Alan Blum. Blum is a doctor and professor at the University of Alabama, where he also heads the Center for the Study of Tobacco and Society. Blum has studied tobacco advertising for decades. Alan Blum, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Sasha.
So the FDA, as you know, has banned tobacco companies from using cartoons in their marketing materials since about 1998. So it's been more than a decade since we've seen that kind of advertising. But let's remind people what cigarette ads used to look like before those regs. Here's Fred and Barney from the Flintstones.
Gee, we ought to do something, Fred. Okay, how's about taking a nap? Hey, I got a better idea. Let's take a Winston break. That's it. Winston is the one filter cigarette that delivers flavor 20 times a pack. Winston's got that filter blend. Yeah, Fred.
Now, that was an ad for Winston cigarettes. Of course, those kinds of ads are no longer legal. But Alan Blum, I understand that you may have a slightly differing view on how effective those kinds of ads were for children. Do you think those were designed for children and hooked them in?
Oh, I think in that era, with a lot fewer people trying to take on the tobacco industry because of the enormous political clout of that industry, certainly they got away with a lot more. And I have no doubt that when I turned on the Flintstones on Friday night as a kid, that there was no thought that they weren't aiming at me. I mean, I was the average viewer of the Flintstones. You could argue also that, like today's Swim TV, was more of an adult-oriented cartoon show, which was sort of a takeoff on the Honeymooners, so it wasn't exactly aimed at little kids. And then, you know, when Joe Camel came in, I think you could argue that that was clearly aimed at a youthful market. On the other hand, I don't know, if you're a 30-year-old buying a pack of cigarettes that with a cartoon mascot, I don't think those of us who've opposed the tobacco industry all these years were entirely thinking through this and realizing that it's just a little too easy to say that they were going after kids.
Let's talk about minority marketing then. This Boston case this week was whether African-American communities were targeted with free cigarettes. So whether or not they were actually giving out free cigarettes is one thing. But what about how much were these companies actually targeting minority communities, particularly African-Americans, 40 years ago when the woman whose family won the $71 million this week was a child?
Well, as Congressman Conyers once described Detroit, there were more billboards for cigarettes in his neighborhood than trees. So, frankly, there is no question that when billboard advertising was everywhere, especially in inner cities, the proportion of tobacco and alcohol advertising was upwards of 5 to 10 times greater than in supposedly more affluent areas. There's no disputing the targeting of tobacco and alcohol advertising to minority groups.
Why would tobacco companies target this specific minority group?
Those with the least income spend the most on alcohol and cigarettes.
It's that simple.
Yes. Those with the least education and the least income are the ones that are spending the most on it. It's a compound tragedy.
Now, menthol cigarettes have not been included in the types of flavored cigarettes banned under the recent legislation signed by Obama, and menthols are often what is targeted at African Americans. Why do you think menthols weren't included?
Well, in the interest of disclosure, I oppose the FDA takeover of tobacco by the Congress giving the FDA powers to regulate tobacco. These really weren't very severe regulatory powers. The Democrats were getting in. They had to show that they were really winning the war on smoking and trying to pass legislation. And it's a very weak act, in my opinion. I mean, one of the panelists has resigned already from that out of frustration. This is not a very strong effort to regulate tobacco. Menthol was exempted because Philip Morris did not want menthol to be included in that bill. And Philip Morris was a supporter. That's Philip Morris, the maker of Marlboro, the leading cigarette manufacturer in the world. Philip Morris supported the bill, wanted this regulation, because what happens under regulation? The smaller companies get hurt compared to the larger companies. We're developing pretty much close to a tobacco monopoly in this country. Philip Morris will pretty much run everything.
Alan Blum, how effective do you think anti-tobacco advertising and public service campaigns are?
Well, I guess you'd have to ask, Sasha, what anti-smoking campaigns? When was the last time you saw an anti-smoking ad? I mean, you know, should we count the seconds till you can think of maybe, you know, something? I can't. I don't watch MTV very often. I'm told there are some there still on there. But we've lost all this funding. The funding that the settlement with the attorneys general was supposed to do was, idealistically, we were going to have the funding from that settlement for all of the problems that the tobacco industry caused all those years. They were going to pay through the nose so that we could educate the next generation not to take up this stuff.
And Massachusetts, for example, I think this year alone gets $821 million out of that settlement, but it only spends about $4.5 million on prevention. So
that's
why aren't we seeing more spent?
That's funny. One of my close colleagues is Dr. Greg Connolly, who used to head up the Massachusetts program on smoking, which was dynamite. Easily the best or second best or at worst third best in the country, and making great progress under his leadership. The problem was he was dealing with a budget of about $50 million, as I believe, initially. Now you're saying it's down to $4.5 million. Now we're talking about 10 years after a settlement that was supposed to make great inroads.
So a lot of the work left to do.
Well, yeah, and my contention is, sad to say, and shockingly, that the state of Massachusetts is closer today to being a partner with the tobacco industry. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts is closer to being a partner by virtue of how much they receive from the master settlement to do budget deficit reduction and general funds than they are to be striking out against the tobacco industry. For every penny that Philip Morris makes selling a pack of Marlboro, I'm told, state of Massachusetts, Commonwealth of Massachusetts gets in a nickel. So for a 30-cent profit on a pack of Marlboros, Massachusetts is raking in $1.50, and that includes settlement money.
Dr. Blum, that sounds like another conversation we should definitely have you back to talk about another time. I appreciate that. Professor Alan Blum is a professor at the University of Alabama. He also heads the Center for the Study of Tobacco and Society, and he studies tobacco's advertising history. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up after a short break, we'll hear about how one man turned the loss of his job into an opportunity to write and perform in a one-man play. And also, a food blogger reimagines the Boston skyline out of vegetables. But first, Radio Boston depends on listeners like you for support to keep our show strong. We're nearing the end of our year-end fundraiser here at WBUR, and we would love to hear from you. Andrew Phelps, Doug Tribou, and Dolores Handy are here now to tell you how to help.